The Happy Accident. The good politician wastes nothing, including misfortune. The Master. The rain arrived in pencil-sized arrows of water, and within seconds the streets of Barker were half an inch deep. Orange-coloured brick buildings turned purple-brown. Night was falling, and a rumble of thunder echoed through the town. A tall, black-haired woman, water pouring down her back, was running from a supermarket entrance across the car park. She was screaming imprecations. The only thing that jarred about the scene was that she was wearing a clerical dog collar. She stopped. She began to hop on one leg. Angela had had a squealing, honking, out-of-control pig of a day. Sanity required that she thought about one thing at a time. But for 8 hours, struggling through admin jobs, balancing books and placating parishioners, she had had Caroline on her mind. There was a bad taste in her mouth about the best thing that had ever happened to her. Something was wrong with Caro. She didn't really want her in Downing Street. That much had been clear before Rome. The more she thought about it, the more she realized that something had always been wrong. Caro was a blue-eyed angel with a golden gaze. But angels weren't fully human. Caro had distanced herself from Angela in recent months, and whenever Angela tried to confront her, an infuriatingly bland, self-possessed smile came onto her face. It was as if she was withdrawing into a cloud, a nimbus of her own charisma. Angela could most of the time cope with that, but Caroline seemed finally to have lost touch with their family life together. She didn't do any of the shopping, or pay any of the bills, or, more important, ask any normal questions about normal things. An orphan herself, Angela firmly believed that family was made, forged by willpower and love. It was not something you were simply handed. So she had made time to go with Caroline to see her parents, the dull and frosty Phillipses, in their overheated, chilly home, even though Caro never seemed to want to go. And by sheer dint of talking and pressing, she'd made Caro take an interest in the boys' homework, and even got her to recognize their friends. Family had to be worked at strenuously. In recent weeks, she'd come to fear that Caro simply didn't regard it as worth the effort. And if that was true, then surely they'd run out of road. With these loud thoughts buzzing around her head, Angela had found the small connections that had held this day together beginning to come apart. To start with, her slightly battered, flaking debit card had been refused at the supermarket during the weekly shop. She made the necessary call. But of course, she had forgotten her online password. Nearly £2,000, for which she'd worked jolly hard, was apparently beyond her reach. Struggling at the checkout to find the notebook in which the password might have been written but was not, she had dropped her phone. It promptly shattered. The checkout girl looked down and shook her head. She didn't seem upset. The screen was crystalline mazed. The bloody thing was useless. Then the phone had rung nevertheless. Still shaking with frustration and being stared at by the rest of the supermarket queue, holding the crumbling glass tile to her ear, Angela heard the school secretary say that Nick, her older boy, was being kept behind for bullying and vandalism, whatever that meant. Leaving her shopping still piled on the belt, a man 3 back at the queue had shouted, "Shame on you!" Angela had sprinted across the car park. She was drenched. The heel of one shoe snapped off. Kicking away the other, she had driven home in soaking, stockinged feet. At least she would be there when Ben arrived from school. Then she'd go back for Nick. On the way home, she had stopped at the phone company's high street store, hobbling wet and shoeless in from the pavement. A very calm Sikh man had pointed out that everything was her fault, that most of their customers, either bought rubber cases for their phones or simply didn't drop them. Anyway, it would take weeks to replace. It had her contacts list, her diary for the weeks ahead, and a fat stash of photos. Had she backed everything up? Well, they could do that at least. They'd need the password, of course. Not the online password. The other one. But because the screen was broken, she couldn't get into her phone to get at it. The man smiled pityingly at her. There was no solution for that. With a sinking heart, Angela left the phone with him anyway. By the time she had driven home, she was shaking, probably with stress as well as cold. She splashed her way up to the front door. No lights on. She was desperate for a pee and could murder a drink. She stabbed the lock with her key. It broke. The man across the road had a spare. The tarmac had torn her tights to pieces. Little pieces of wet, oily grit stuck to the soles of her feet. The man across the road was out. She really needed to pee. Angela shouldered her way past a laburnum bush heavy with water to the back garden where she found, thank you, Lord, that she'd forgotten to lock the kitchen door. She dried her feet. She had her pee. She found Caroline's slippers. There were two bottles of Chablis in the fridge, screw tops. She unscrewed one. As she poured her second glass, she vaguely wondered what she had forgotten about. The house phone rang. It was Nick. He never normally sounded distressed, but he was plainly in tears.
"Please, Mum, come as soon as you can."
Just at that moment, Ben had come barging through the front door. He galumphed towards the stairs. His feet were currently too big for the rest of him to properly control, heading for the Xbox. Angela intercepted him and kissed him hard on the sweaty crown of his head. There was no more pleasurable scent in the world than Ben's hair. Then she explained that she was off to get Nick and headed back to the car. She clambered unsteadily in and turned the key. During the next few minutes, Angela thought in a hard and concentrated way about what might have gone wrong with Nick. He'd had to cope with so much. His parents' divorce, a busy professional mother, several changes of address, the whole coming out thing. Caroline gave him hugs and kisses in a perfunctory way, but never her whole attention. In turn, Nick gave little away. Ever since he'd been a toddler, his calm, expressionless face had been that of an old man who had seen much of the world and been impressed by very little of it. His estranged father had called him Old Nick. Angela had come to rely on his impassivity. Sometimes it seemed to her as though he were the adult and she the striving, attention-seeking child. She remembered his now famous fifth birthday party as she turned the car sharp left towards the school driveway. Nicky had... Her thoughts were interrupted by a loud banging sound. She saw a blur in the rain and something thumped across the windscreen before falling towards the curb. Jamming on the brakes and turning the engine off, Angela got out of the car. She realized that she was still wearing Caroline's slippers. Something blue and silver was lying in front of her. The bicycle looked as if it had been subjected to major surgery. Its frame was badly bent, one wheel was crooked, and the other was missing altogether. There was a shatter of something silver on the road. It reminded Angela of her phone. The cyclist, on the other hand, seemed fine. She was lying in a comfortable-looking position on the pavement, legs and arms stretched out like a child making sand angels at the beach. She was an elfin girl with closed eyes and red hair. Angela knew at once that she was dead. A passerby, no one she recognized from the church, took her by the arm. A few minutes later, the police car arrived. By now, there was a small crowd. People were gasping and wailing.
She stinks of drink, somebody said.
The policewoman was one of Angela's parishioners. She spoke kindly.
I'm so sorry, Vicar, but I'm going to have to ask you to stand to one side and blow into this.
Then she arrested Angela, not quite as kindly. 20 minutes later, Angela was sitting in a police cell. She'd been told she could call her lawyer. The dead girl hadn't been wearing a helmet, but she'd had lights and a reflective belt. One of the witnesses who'd been driving behind Angela had said that she hadn't indicated. To her shock, she found that she didn't dare call Caroline. Had things become that bad between them? Instead, she called Nick, but she found she didn't know what to say to him, so she just told him to go home and look after Ben. Once upon a time, a small suburban police station on the outskirts of Barker, washed by the dark and the rain, would have been a million miles away from the centres of power. But that time had long passed. Just half an hour after Angela had been admitted, the news desk of the Daily Mirror received a quiet phone call from Peter Quint and tweeted the story. Among those to whose attention it was brought was the master in faraway Rome, who was halfway through a workout in the opulent, overdecorated gymnasium of the Hotel Excelsior Splendide. He leaned forward and slowed the treadmill down. Then, still on it, he did a little jig of pleasure.